This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Given the topic of this week's book hype being romance and love and all that fun stuff, we are going to suggest Outlander as an audiobook for you to download from Audible. This is a great story, and this weekend is the premiere of Outlander on Starz, so I definitely suggest checking out Outlander. And for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Karen, my typical co-host, and two very lovely guests, Kristen and Brittany. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Oh, in unison, I like it. All right, so we're going to get started, and we're going to talk about, as always, the books that we've been reading. And we're this week is basically going to be a really just very low-key news week. We're going to talk a little bit about Gone Girl, which just came out. Some really cool casting that's been going on for the Scorch Trials, and they turned around on that movie fast. So there's a lot of casting news for that and just some other really fun things that have been happening in the book world. So Brittany, as one of our lovely guests, why don't you start and tell us what you've been reading this week?
So I've been having trouble falling asleep lately. So I downloaded the free ebook of Peter Pan, which is one of my all-time favorite stories from when I was little. And I've been rereading it, which is interesting having gone through Once Upon a Time, having an evil Peter Pan and then trying to read
and try to reconcile that.
But it's still amazing. And then the book that I've been carrying around with me for at least 2 months because I got an advanced reader's copy of is Belzar by Meg Wolitzer. And I'm about 3/4 of the way through it finally. But I've been carrying it around forever trying to get into it and read it. And I finally hit that point where I just can't put it down. So it's amazing. And I highly recommend it. It's out now, so everyone can read it.
Very fun. I had a student read it, and she, like, bawled her eyes out as she was reading it in class. It was fantastic. okay, it's fine. Karen, what have you been reading this week?
Things have been a little crazy for me, so I'm only about halfway through this book, but it's called Hit by Lorianne Grover, and it's really good. I did not think I was going to like it because it's about this girl who has this crush on her teacher, which to me is kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that. He's a grad student and she's a senior in high school. And she's convinced that he's sort of flirting back with her through poems and stuff. He's the English teacher. And he ends up accidentally hitting her with his car. And so it's this back and forth told from both of their perspectives of just what's going on. And he hits her with the car like within 3 chapters. So you kind of see her going through surgery and getting put in the hospital in recovery and how she's processing that. And for me, that's really interesting. And then you also see him trying to deal with what he's doing and trying to figure out, okay, do I actually like this girl? Who is 18, by the way? They make a point of saying that. But it ended up being a really easy read and something that really just makes you go from chapter to chapter. So I'm really excited to see how it finishes.
That sounds really different.
Yeah.
Really, like, I don't even know where to go with that. Now, is Lorianne Grover, did she co-write Dune? Or is that someone different?
I think that's Lori Langdon, isn't it?
Oh, okay. That name sounds, but Lorianne Grover sounds so familiar. That's why I'm asking. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, she wrote something else I read, I think.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, it sounds so familiar. But anyway, so that's a really, I don't know, it's a really interesting book, Karen. I can't wait to see you, like, how you feel about it when you're done with it.
Yeah, and she wrote Firstborn.
Oh, that's what it was. I'm like, mm-hmm. I know we've talked about her before. And that was another really unique book. So.
Yeah, really different. And by the end of that one, I wasn't entirely sure how I felt about it. So I'm curious if that's just kind of her writing style.
Very possible. All right. Kristen, what have you been up to? Because you've been reading some of my favorite books. So tell us about that.
I Yeah, I have been racing through books lately and I love it. Like, I went through a period where I wasn't reading very much, and so now it's just like exploding all over the place. I just finished Stay With Me by Jay Lynn, which I gobbled up. I love that series so much. It's the third book in the series, and I've kind of been waiting for it because I really loved the character of Calla. We met her in the second book, I think. And I really liked her, so I was really excited to get to read her story.
Now,
And
have
that
you
was
read her other
what?
books? Have you read Jennifer Almentrout's other books? I've not read this series.
I haven't read the Lux series yet. I want to. It's on my
Have
ever-present list.
you read the White Hot Kiss series?
No, I have the first one.
You need to get on that
I
right
have
now.
the first one, and I actually started it last week, just barely. Like, I read like
Yeah.
the first two chapters,
You
so.
know, you yeah, no, you need to.
But
Anyway, I'm
yeah.
sorry. Yeah, I
No, no
finished the
problem.
second book, which comes out in November. I got my hands on a copy of Stone Cold Touch,
Yeah.
and just trust me, you want to get on that.
All right, so I'll move that one up the list right now. Okay. I also just finished Perfect Kind of Trouble by Chelsea Fine. I loved her first one. It's kind of in that series. I can't remember the name of it right now. But I absolutely loved the first book, and so I was really excited about this one. It was just as great. I really, really love her books, so that was a lot of fun too. And this afternoon, I just started Isla and the Happily Ever After. After waiting to get my hands on it from my library, I finally just went out and bought it. I was like, forget it, I'm done. And so I started this afternoon, and I'm already loving it, so very excited.
It's so good. Isla is just, we won't go into it again because we'll be here all day, but
I read
listeners
Anna.
know how Karen and I feel about Isla and Marima. We have very deep feelings about Isla.
Well, Karen already knows. I've read Anna and I've read Lola, and she knows that I absolutely fell in love with Lola. Like, Lola
Really?
and Cricket are, oh my God, I love them. So I'm very, very excited about Isla and Josh. It's going to be amazing.
Cricket was fantastic. I did love Cricket, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we have to move on. Otherwise, we are all day talking about Stephanie Perkins and all her amazing books.
Yeah.
So for me, I read The Young Elite by Marie Lu, which comes out on Tuesday. And you guys, this book is so freaking cool. Like, I can't even, like, it is this really cool, like, it feels almost like a video game, and yet it's got these, like, elements of Games of Thrones. Like, it is so cool, you guys. So I don't want to give too much away because it's a really complex world, and if you say the wrong thing, it'll kind of unravel a lot of stuff. But like, go get the book. Like, it is so good.
Is this her new series?
Yes, this is the new one,
Cool.
and it's got these really cool elements in it, and there's just so much going on, and it's a lot of strong female characters. And Marie Lu just has a way of writing. If you guys have read any of her other series, the Legend series, she's just so good. And she's very visual when she writes. She started off as a video game designer. And the thing that's really cool about The Young Elite is if you look online, there are a lot of drawings of the characters and what they should look like and all of this other stuff. And she drew them because she's an artist to some extent. But like, it's so cool. The world building, all of it is there, and it's just so good. And again, a lot of really cool characters, dynamic characters, diverse characters. So there's a lot going on in that book that's just a lot of fun, and it's really entertaining. It's a lot of action. So Tuesday is the day. We also have an excerpt on Hypeable from The Young Elite. So definitely check that out. And then the other book I read this week was called All She Ever Wanted, and it's by Barbara Freethy, and it's an adult book. And it's like a murder mystery kind of book, when you guys know I have a love of murder mystery. So I read that, like, I basically read that today before we did this because I've maybe not been out of bed that much today. I'm not feeling so great. So that's how I spent my Sunday. So that's what I've read this week. It's been a super lazy week. I just finished classes, so I have a couple weeks, and I'm hoping now I will get caught up on book reading. Although by the middle of this week, Karen and I are going to be in New York City at New York City Comic Con, which any Comic Con we attend is never allows a lot of time for reading, unfortunately.
No.
So I'm not really sure how much we're going to get done this week, except I have a feeling I'm going to have to pry the Blood of Olympus out of Karen's hands at some point in time to keep her focused on other things, but we'll see.
Most
Actually,
definitely.
I'm hoping to have that finished before I even see you,
Are you
so.
just asleep? Like, what's going on?
We're
I
gonna
hear
see.
Rocky music in the
I think
background.
we do. I think we're gonna caffeine Karen quite a bit.
Yes.
So, So as you guys know, next week we are, or our next episode will be featuring our cover story of The Blood of Olympus with review, lots of commentary from Karen, who is maybe a diehard Rick Riordan fan. So as always, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you guys a chance to try out their service. So we are going to suggest you guys pick up Blood of Olympus so you'll have plenty of time to listen to it before our podcast, which will be live on the 21st of October. So for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. That's audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. All right. So Kristen, you're here as a special guest, but you also, your book feature went up last week about the five books that define you as a reader. So go ahead and share those with us. Tell us a little bit about what books define you.
Yeah, this was a really fun exercise. It took me a while, I have to say. There was quite the list. I think I had like 20 books at one point, and I narrowed them down. Like, it was elimination style. It was really, really rough. I didn't include Harry Potter, although Goblet of Fire is one of my favorite books, and I decided these were the ones that define me, not just my favorites. So while I have a lot of new favorite authors, because I've read a lot of different people lately, I didn't include any of them really either. But the five that define me, the first is it's a fairy tale. It's called The Enormous Turnip. When I was in the fourth grade, my teacher kind of pulled me out of class one day and said, "Hey, there's a storytelling competition that's going to be, it was like an hour away from where I live in Ohio." And she was like, I really want you to go. Like, I want you to pick a story and you had to memorize the story. And then we practiced like telling the story animatedly. And like, I did The Enormous Turnip and I had to pull the turnip like with my hands and pretend. Like, it was really, really fun. And I had a really good time. So it stands out in my mind as like a way to read a story and a different way to look at a story. And so that always just, the first thing that comes to mind anytime people say something that a book that defines you or really affected you, that one always comes to mind for me. The second one is The BFG by Roald Dahl, which if anyone, anyone in the world has read a Roald Dahl book, not just seen the movie versions, his books are amazing. And I remember picking this up in, I think it was the third grade, maybe second grade, I don't know. But I picked it up and I just fell in love with it. It's all about this giant that his family like eats children and they're exactly what you think of when you think of giants. And he's kind of the opposite. He wants to breathe dreams, to give dreams to little children, and he loves them and he doesn't want to hurt them. And so it's a really, really beautiful little story. And it's, I credit him and that book with giving me a real love for character, because the big friendly giant is a character all his own. He's beautiful. My third one is Bet Me by Jennifer Kruse. She is an author from Cincinnati, Ohio, which I love. And she, this was one of the first like adult books that I read. I've always been a big reader, but I've mainly stayed kind of to my reading level. Like, I didn't really venture very far from where I was supposed to be reading. And until like maybe freshman year of high school, I just started reading adult novels, romance, whatever. It didn't matter. I was just going to read whatever sounded cool. And this was probably my first real like adult kind of romance novel, but I call it more like romantic fiction, because it's not really like sex heavy or anything, but it's just a really beautiful story. And it's really fun because it's about this guy and this woman, and they both have two friends, so it's two groups of three, and they meet in this bar that's like a themed bar. Like, it's themed in gambling, and like, it's not really a casino or anything, but it's kind of themed that way. And they meet, and he makes this bet with a friend of his, but he doesn't actually make the bet. It just sounds like he did. And so she overhears it, and it's this interplay between the two of them. But it's one of my favorite books. I can't even tell you how many times I've read it. I will love it forever. And it really just sticks with me. My fourth is A Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood, which if anyone has read this book, you know why it defines you and why it sticks with you. It goes above and beyond just a story. Like, she really puts you in this crazy world where women are not, they're not really people. They are, but they aren't. The main character's name is Offred, which actually is of Fred. It means that she belongs to Fred, which is the like head of her house. They call them commanders. And I read this story in a class for college. She's a Canadian author, and the class was Canadian fiction. And I just remember being one of the first times that a book really like affected me and like really made me change my way of thinking and really got me thinking outside of just what I'd been taught and what I knew. And it really, you know, college is one of those times where you start exploring new ways of thinking and new ideas. And this book just hit me at the right time where it was really, really transformative is the word. So if you haven't read A Handmaid's Tale, you really, really should. It's a very, very good book, and it really, really makes you think. And the last one is one that might be a little more familiar to people. It's the sequel to If I Stay by Gail Forman, Where She Went. I absolutely love this pair of characters, and I love their story. I liked If I Stay a lot, and so I read the sequel because I liked the first book. But when I started the second book, I knew I was going to love it more than the first. There's just something about it being narrated by Adam in this post If I Stay world, like knowing what he's gone through with her and what he must have gone through with her, like not being around. It's such a beautiful little story. And I love, you kind of follow them through New York over the course of an evening, and they're just kind of catching up because they haven't seen or talked to each other in a while. And it's, I really, really love their story. And not to mention, I am musical, like I've sung my entire life. And so music has a very important role for me. And so these two characters, having it be so crucial to who they are, I think it's another reason of why it touched me too. So that was my five. I love them. I love them so, so much. And it was hard. It was really, really hard.
Yeah, we all discovered that it was really hard because there's so many things you want to include or so many parameters you want to put around something, and it's hard to describe. And Brittany, you have a set coming up too. Yours is in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, it's in 2 weeks. And I was just about to say, you put so much pressure on me because there's so much, like, your thought process is so good. I'm like, the Lorax or Cat in the Hat better? And you have like these beautiful, eloquent reasons for picking your books, and I'm just all back at the drawing board.
Well, I tried to pick ones from different times of my life. Like, I didn't want them all to be, because I could have picked five books that I've read in the last 2 months that I'm like, oh my God, I love these books. They will be with me forever. But I was like, no. Don't just pick what you love now. Pick things that are important. And so, yeah.
Oh, no. It was fantastic. And I was thinking of doing the same thing. Right now, I'm in the boat where you were earlier, where I have a list of like 15 to 20 books. Mm-hmm. And I keep thinking of more every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard. And I am doing the same thing. As soon as I saw the first one, I'm like, well, can't do Harry Potter. I know. But I am going to do the same thing that you did and put a little disclaimer in.
Yeah.
Meredith did honorable mentions. So.
Yeah. And she had like a dozen.
Yeah. Yeah. She totally cheated, but whatever.
And they were all series.
She's like, so she got like exponentially more out of it by the way she crafted hers. So, you know, feel free to put a disclaimer with maybe some honorable mentions or something. Cause it is super hard. Like, how do you decide? It is never easy. All right, so I'm going to put the second ad in right here, and then we'll get on with the rest of the discussion. All right, so let's get on to some news for this lovely past week. All right, so let's take a vote. How many people thought we were experiencing April Fools several months early when you saw that Twilight was going to be made into mini films? And go.
raising my hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification. Like, all in favor say aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Yeah. I was, I'm sorry, what did I just read? What's going on with this? So the news is that the guide, which contains lots of backstories and people we didn't have a lot of information on, that some of those character stories will be made into short films. And the idea is that it's meant to be short films directed and created by women. Did you guys read the article?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that is correct. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but Laura Byrne Cristiano, who works at Hypeable with us, worked on the guide. She's listed as one of the editors of the guide. So it's really interesting. She's like, what is this business? Like, she didn't know about it until she saw the article. So it's kind of an interesting thing, I guess. I don't know. So how do you guys feel about this?
Well, I read the list of ladies that are kind of involved, and it's a powerhouse list of women, like,
yeah,
in the film industry. Like, you don't get people like Octavia Spencer and Kate Winslet and Julie Bowen. Like, these are some really interesting women involved in this. So that makes me at least slightly positive about the news, because, I mean, if they're involved, hopefully it will be a really, really awesome project. I know people will always put the, ugh, it's Twilight label on it. But, I mean, it doesn't mean that it can't be a really cool idea and end up turning out better than we thought.
That's what I keep thinking.
Like... Go ahead, Karen.
Sorry. That's what I keep thinking. Like, the idea of it seems really interesting. And I think that it's fantastic to put female directors at the forefront like this, but I guess we'll just have to see if they can actually pull it off and make something that, I don't know, maybe steps up the name of Twilight a little bit. And I hate saying that because I'm a big believer in not shaming anybody for what they read, and Twilight often gets, you know, that end of the stick, but I think the movies and everything did some things right, but they also did a lot of things wrong. And I'll be interested to see if this kind of turns out to be something that can kind of repair some of the damage that the movies did, because I loved the books, especially the first book, but I have no interest in this fandom anymore because of the movies. And it's sad to say that, and probably a little unfair, but I just kind of got over the hype pretty quickly. So I don't know, maybe this will make it exciting again.
Plus, I mean, there is a drought in when it comes to women filmmakers. Like, there's not very many that do anything in Hollywood right now. So if anything, if this inspires young girls to want to make movies, then I'm all for it. Like, if they see these women making movies about things they love and they want to try it, like, I'm all game for that. So that could be work in our favor, hopefully.
Yeah, and I'm glad it's not, they're not going back to being like, let's remake Twilight, which is the impression I got just from the headline when I first heard this news. But I'm glad that they're opening it and expanding it to the people we haven't seen and people maybe only diehard fans know about. So it kind of gives it a new life outside of Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, and I think it will. There's a lot of really interesting characters that I think she introduces us to, but we never really get a good look at. And there are a lot of questions left unanswered about them. So hopefully as they approach those characters, things will be different. Things will look a lot different.
Yeah, so. And it almost makes me want to go back and, like, when more announcements come, even go back and see. Because I gave up after the third book. Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of the third and fourth books, but I really did enjoy the first and second one immensely.
Yeah, I thought the first and second were really good. The fourth one, really, I've only ever read it once. Just so I could be done. You know what I mean? So I could say I knew how it ended.
But yeah, I've only ever read it
once. Yeah.
And I haven't seen the movies, but I think that's just because of the connotation that came with them.
Yeah. I mean, they're not. They are what they are, just like with so many things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when you do an adaptation, it can only be as good as its source material.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's where they're at with those. But yeah. I don't know.
And
we'll
I felt
see.
Good leaving it where I was with it. So I was like, okay, let's not ruin the first two books.
You're like, but they were so, yeah. So I don't know. I'll be interested to see. There are a couple, like I said, there are a couple of characters who were really interesting and had a lot to offer that weren't really explored. So it'll be interesting to see if they're some of the ones that they're going to be working on and what that'll look like in the end, I guess. So on to some more adaptation kind of news. As we talked about last week, the Sports Trials was picked up right after opening weekend of The Maze Runner. And Woo! They've made, I know, pretty awesome.
Yes.
They've made four separate casting announcements in the last week, which is kind of intense. And some of them are pretty big names. Like we have...
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Just kind of.
Yeah.
No, it's funny because Brooke, the girl that covers The Maze Runner and Scorch Trials on Hypeable, we were talking about this, and she's like, Dylan, who's from Teen Wolf, who is definitely still a relative newbie in the whole acting world, she's like, he's going to be working with some pretty fantastic people. This is amazing for him. I hope he takes advantage of this opportunity.
And he will.
Yeah.
He will so much. He will eat it up. I'm so excited for him.
Yeah. So basically we have Aidan Gillen, who anyone who watches Game of Thrones will know him as Littlefinger.
I have strange feelings about this. Okay, so I should probably say I've not read the Scorch Trials yet. It's very high up on my list right now, so I can kind of stay ahead of everything that's going to be coming out about the movie. So I don't really know anybody that, like, who these people are going to be playing. But the guy who's playing Ratman, he gives me this, like, weird feeling. And it's the same thing with Michael Hogan. Because Michael Hogan played a bad guy on Battlestar Galactica, and he played a bad guy on Teen Wolf. And I can't look at his face without feeling, like, really scared for my life. And I feel the same way with Aidan Gillen, because he's just got this, like, creep factor to him. And I'm sure he's a wonderful man, but I can't get Littlefinger out of my head.
Yeah, so there's that. So I think he'll be fantastic as a creepy guy, because he's like, one of the main villains in the Scorch Trials, is he not? I'm pretty sure
yeah.
he is. Yeah.
As far as I remember, he's yeah. one of the more prominent ones.
And then they cast Rosa Salazar, who also, interestingly, was cast in Insurgent. So she's going to be rocking two YA film adaptations for next year. So she's going to be Brenda, and she's seen as a strong, independent character that Thomas relies heavily on once outside the maze. She's more familiar with the outside world and lends quite a bit of to the overall plot of the story, and she's a key character in the Maze Runner world. So that's interesting. Then we have Jacob Lofland, and he plays Eris, and he's described as a mysterious young boy who has an interesting tie to the world of the maze. He's similar to the other boys, and yet there are a few key differences that set him apart. It is the differences that reveal more about what Wicked has planned from the has been planning from the start. So he's kind of a character that has a lot of background information that we're probably going to want later on as this continues. And then Juan Carlo Esposito is the leader of the Cranks, which are described as a group of lone survivors cursed with an incurable disease.
I think I was most excited about Juan Carlo Esposito because Me too. I could,
without a doubt.
Like, I've read the Scorch Trials, and picturing him as the leader of the Cranks, I like made that fangirl squeal sound that I try really hard not to make. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about this.
I just like him. I don't care what he's in.
I know.
He could be playing a magic mirror. He could be Gus in Breaking Bad, whatever. He's yeah. so great.
He was in Revolution too, wasn't he?
I believe so.
He was. Yeah.
That's so, why he left Once Upon a Time for a little
right.
while.
So now that that's done, he can kind of come back and hang out in the mirror, of course. So yeah, so I'm really excited because he always plays really dynamic characters, and I love that. Do you know, I think it's so fantastic. So we're going to move on from that lovely adaptation to another adaptation because, you know, it's just been that kind of week. And we're going to talk a little bit about Gone Girl. Now, I know I've seen it and Kristen's seen it. Karen or Brittany, have either of you guys seen it or read it?
I've read it. I haven't okay. seen it.
Neither.
Okay. We'll try not to spoil it too much for you, Karen. So the movie clocks in at 2.5 hours long, first of all. 2.5 hours. It doesn't necessarily feel like you're watching a 2.5 hour long movie, but it is 2.5 hours long. And it is intense. Kristen, did you find it to be like super intense?
I only read about halfway. So the second, like the part where I had stopped reading was probably like half an hour into the movie. So the last 2 hours of that movie are just jam packed. And I'm like, okay, now I really have to finish this book. But it was really, really great. Really great story. I'm really excited to kind of finish it now.
Yeah, it was really intense. There are some changes. I have to say it is one of the adaptations I've seen with probably the least amount of changes to content. There is so little that they didn't keep from the core story and so few things that were changed. Even if they were changes, they were so limited. There wasn't anything drastic about the changes or anything that really impacted the story at all. The story was the story that, and the interesting part is Gillian Flynn, who's the author, also wrote the screenplay. So she kind of kept everything that she knew was integral intact. And really told the story just in a slightly different manner, but really it's all there. And it's so, Ben Affleck in this movie is so good. You want to hate him. Everything in that first like half of the movie, because you don't really know what's going on unless you've read the book. Like if you're just an audience member watching the movie, you want to hate him. He's a despicable human being. And yet there's this shift and then you're like, oh my God. He's really not the despicable human being. There's someone who's even worse out there. Like,
was this her first like attempt at screenwriting?
I think so. Yeah, she used to write for CW.
She did an amazing job.
Yeah, it is like it is ridiculous.
Screenwriting is no joke. I've tried my hand at it, and yeah, it was abysmal. But I mean, it's no joke. It's a very specific medium, and for her to switch to that and do such an amazing job, I'm really impressed by that. Like, that really excites me.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to hear that, because when I first heard that they were making this into a movie, I was like, how? I was so, like, I was nervous that it wasn't going to translate, like, where you have that switch that you're talking about.
Oh, no, and it translates.
I'm really glad to hear that it did, and I think I'm actually going to see it this week, so I'm happy to go in with
it's
good sauce.
So, I went yesterday afternoon, and the theater was packed. Like, I went at, like, noon, and usually if you go, like, to a noon show, there's not a lot of people. The place was packed. I was really surprised how packed it was for a noon showing.
And they picked the perfect director for that story.
Yes.
Fincher is very good with not crowding the screen with unnecessary things. Like, he doesn't feel the need to do things with the camera just to make a point. He is very much, like, set it and leave it and use the shot you've got. Like, he doesn't do a whole lot of extraneous things to distract you. So he lets this world and the story tell itself. And I love that. And it's perfect for this movie. So yeah, it's a really great adaptation.
Yeah, it was just, and if you guys look at the movie review on Hypeable, I think Louis was in love with it. Like, on so many levels. Like, I've never seen Louis write something so like positive ever. He was so excited about it. He's just like in love with the movie.
I noticed that.
He's a big sign.
Yeah, he can get pretty critical, which I think is important as a movie reviewer, but he definitely really loved the movie.
Yes. I read it too, because I always get really nervous when he writes adaptation reviews, because I'm like, but have you read the book? Do you know?
And you might recognize Rosamund Pike, who's playing Amy. She, if you recognize her from things like Pride and Prejudice.
I know, right?
It's so amazing what she does with the character in this movie. Like, she is brilliant. And it just floored me. I was like, oh my God, okay, I will see everything she does for the rest of her life. Like,
I'm a believer. She's very eccentric in a lot of ways around that. But yeah, it is. And we're trying not to give it away, because it's good.
Right. But she's just, it's a very interesting character, and she does an amazing job with it. Yeah.
It's disturbingly so. But yeah, it's definitely a thriller in a lot of different ways. And then Tyler Perry's in it too. And I saw people making comments. They just want to see a movie about Tyler Perry's character in this movie. And it's cool because he's a lawyer. And so he has got this really cool, I really liked him in that. Like, he wasn't in it very much, but I did like what he brought as the lawyer a lot. There was a lot going on there. It was cool. And I liked the lead detective too.
Yes, I did too. I really, really liked her. And as you said, Tyler Perry, there's not a lot of funny in this book or this movie, but he brings the little bit of lightheartedness. He just kind of breaks the tension enough that you're like, okay, I can breathe. Like, whew, take a second. It's really great.
It is. So yeah, so of course we clearly can't recommend Gone Girl enough at this point.
I'm
It
looking
is
forward to it.
I can't wait to hear what you have to say because it is so cool. I can't Marima was like really excited about it too, so I can't wait to see what she has to say about it as well. Cause she was just like because there's this whole did they keep the ending of the book? Did they change the ending of the book? How did they change the ending of the book? And so there's that whole dynamic around that. And so I think it really piques your curiosity, so. And I'm not going to tell you what they did with the end of the book. I'm just going to leave
And
it.
I don't know because I haven't read the end of the book, so I can't spoil it.
That's right. Kristen's in much safer water at this point.
Yeah, I have no idea.
So next up, of course, as we mentioned earlier, you guys, on the 21st of October, we're going to release our podcast, and it's going to be about all about the Blood of Olympus, which is Karen's baby at this point. She loves Rick Riordan, so I can't wait to hear what she has to say about this. And so, of course, you guys can send in your questions, your comments, all that good stuff. But one more other thing to note, that the Blood of Olympus is going to have a first print of 3 million copies. That's a lot of books for a first print. It's pretty intense. The other thing that I found was really interesting is that there are 40 million Rick Riordan books published in the US across all of his series.
He is just a beast, man. Like
He's
I have never read him, but he's just unbelievable. He amazes me.
pumps out, I mean, he really usually only pumps out a book a year. When he was writing, what was the King Chronicles, he was doing two a year. But still, I mean, all he does is write. He barely goes on tours. And it's just about a week around the time that his book comes out, and the rest of the time he just spends writing, and I mean, he's pretty prolific.
Yeah, but the fact that his books have 40 million in print is like crazy. Like
And that's just in the US. I mean,
yeah,
his
that's
books are worldwide.
I know, and that's what it said. It was it, that number because I double checked it. I got it out of Publishers Weekly, and it said that that was a US number. I'm like, oh my God, that's
It makes me wonder
intense.
how that compares. Like,
Yeah,
how
I'll have to
many,
search.
like Harry Potter or, how many books of theirs exist in the United States? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, because 40 million is a lot, but he has, the 7 books in the first Percy Jackson series, and then the seven going to be seven in the Heroes of Olympus, and then he's got
Five.
the Kane
It's only
Chronicles.
five. It's not seven.
Yeah,
It's
five and
five.
five.
Oh, is it? Oh, wow. Five and
Yeah.
five. I can't add today. There are extra books in my head. They just exist.
I want to read them.
maybe someday. No, so it's five and five, and then I don't know what's in the Kane Chronicles.
Three.
Three.
Because that's the only one I haven't read.
So
Three.
he's got a total of
So.
13 books in print, unless you, well, 14 if you count the God Files that just came out.
Yeah,
Yeah.
he has a couple other like
But like the little
smaller
ones, right? So
things.
he's maybe got 15 books in print, 16 books in print. But still, 40 million copies in the US. That's a lot of books. It's pretty amazing. And I'm actually going to go, he's starting his tour, as Karen mentioned, for the Blood of Olympus. And it opens up here in New England because he's living in Boston now. So I'm going to head up to Boston on Tuesday, which will be the day that this podcast releases. For the launch party for the Blood of Olympus. So that'll be really cool. And you get to see him on Friday, right, Karen? The
I
following Friday?
do, yeah, which is really cool. He also has a couple of other novels outside of the mythological novels. I'm assuming they're probably including those numbers as well.
No, I think they're only Percy Jackson books. Like,
Oh.
that is, yeah. Because the other books are adult books, aren't they?
Yes. Well, I mean, he's written, I think, one book out of the 39 Clues series.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah.
I don't know if that counts. But from when I was reading, it was just his, because they basically announced the first print run and how many there would be in it when they, and that's where that other number was included as well. So that's why I'm like, huh,
I mean,
interesting.
either way, you're looking at a lot of books.
Yeah, either way, that's a lot of success. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of success. So Good on you, Rick Riordan. Keep writing all those lovely books. All right, and so the last thing we're going to talk about, I found this really cool article on Publishers Weekly, and it's basically about these companies that are starting YA-only imprints, so that the only thing that these publishing houses are going to publish are YA books. And I find it interesting. Do you guys think that that's something that can sustain itself, or do you think it's more like kind of the thing for now?
I think it can sustain itself. I mean, just since we've started doing this podcast, I feel like the YA category has gotten bigger and bigger, and as Hollywood moves in to grab more titles to turn into movies, people are just kind of realizing that young adult books are a force of nature, really. So I think that this is awesome.
Well, and this might be the, like, realist in me, but, like, young adult youth, people who are falling in the age group they're looking for, have more, like, disposable income, and they're more able to go and pick up a new book than even some adults. So it's, like, I think it's really smart to start and to aim toward the young adult audience and have, I think, absolutely that they can support themselves, because these kids want, you know, they want to read, especially now that it's becoming like a cool thing to read some of these books behind these movies that are coming out. So I totally think you can.
Do you know what the population is that buys the most young adult novels?
Well, it's older than...
It's probably not young adults. It's probably
right.
Women who have been to college, who are in the age range of 25 to 47.
Hey, that's me.
That's, I know. That's all of us.
that's all of us.
Not me.
Not you, baby. It's okay.
I mean, it's only 1 year, so it's okay.
You're like, I'm only off a little bit. It's okay. But yeah, so that's the thing, is that while they're marketing, you know, while the books are technically young adult, they're not the only ones reading them, and everybody knows that. Anyone in the book publishing world knows that it wouldn't be sustainable to have a teen go out and buy a $18 book, you know, once a week. That's just not. So we're looking at, and what they're also looking at is that first wave of young adult, when it really started to hit, those people are now in their 20s. So they're also carrying through. If they're continuing to read, they're still looking for that source. So there's some really, it was just a really interesting article from Publishers Weekly about, you know, having a startup that basically you're culling from scratch these books. So you're cultivating novels and finding them and going out there, you know. So I don't know, it's interesting. So some of the places that have them, Amazon has Skyscape, which started in 2013, and they're putting out 40 to 50 titles a year.
Whoa,
that's a lot of titles. So their basic books, their biggest books have been Susan E's Penryn and the End of Days series, which was Angel Fall and Afterworld. And then Capstone has just started this year something called Switch, and they're planning on putting out 10 to 12 titles a year. And their book, their like brag book, is called Lois Lane Fallout, and it comes out in May 2015.
And I am very excited about.
Oh, you know Lois about Lane. This one. Yeah.
Lois Lane is an obsession of mine, and I'm so geeked about this book.
This does look really cool. It's about Lois Lane and her like high school age, like high school years as a teen sleuth.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be awesome. I think that's pretty cool. the other one is Carol Rhoda Lab, and it's been around since 2010. And they're putting about 8 to 12 books out a year. And Carol Rhoda chooses really interesting books. They're very different. They're not your, like, average, like, romance books or anything like that. They really push the boundaries of different things. And one of their brag books is No Crystal Stair by Vonda Michelle Nelson. What else? There's one called Chai Teen. I think that's how you say it. It's C-H-I or Chai Teen. And it's 2014. And they're only going to put out 3 to 4 a year. And it's dark literary genre fiction that includes science fiction, fantasy, magical realism. So the one thing about a lot of these, the YA-only imprints, is that they're very specific as to what they're putting out. So they're very specific to the type of genre they're putting out. They're within like a subgenre almost as to what they're focusing on, which is kind of interesting. I think one that everyone's heard of probably is Harlequin Teen. And they've been around since 2009, and they put out between 35 and 45 novels a year, which is a lot. But they do really well. They have a lot of like anchor books. Like Julie Kagawa has been writing for them since she started, and her books sell ridiculously well. So she's one that's really been really successful for them. And they do more commercialized YA across all genres. There was another one. Oh, Soho Teen does some really cool stuff. They do mysteries and thrillers for teens. And this year, their big book is The Unfinished Life of Addison Stone by Adele Griffin. Source Books does some really cool storytelling, and they've been around since 2010. If you guys have ever read a book by Miranda Canali, she's through Source Books. It's Source Books Fire, so that's their teen imprint. Do you guys know what the oldest teen imprint around has been? Anyone? This is your trivia time, kids.
No.
Penguin Razorbill has been the longest running teen imprint, and they're well over 10 years old, which is shocking when you think about it. They were way ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
So rock on, Penguin. So I just thought it was really interesting how these little houses are cropping up all over with this very specific niche that they're trying to target. So,
which I think is so cool. I mean, not that we buy books based on, you know, which publishing company they're from. At least I don't. I usually don't even notice what they're from. I go by authors or if I just like the story. But I think that maybe looking at some of these smaller houses, you're like, are they really going to be as good as the bigger ones? But like the last one on this list, you know, funnily enough, is Blank, who put out Firstborn by Lorianne Grover. And like I said, that book I had very mixed feelings about. It was excellent, but I just wasn't sure how I felt about it by the end of it. But Hit and, gosh, I can't even remember. There's been a couple other books that I've gotten from them and reviewed, and they've all been really, really good. Like, I've been surprised because you look at these small houses and you're like, okay, these authors aren't that big yet. Can we really trust the writing? But I think that stuff like this is going to be so cool because it's got this indie vibe to it. And these authors, you know, they wouldn't have gotten picked up if they weren't good. So definitely give them a try. And maybe I'll put the link in the description and, you know, kind of scroll through these and see if any catch your eye. I'm really bad because I just look at the covers and I'm like, oh, Angel Fall looks really cool. I like that cover. Maybe I'll try that one.
I think you would
one.
Actually like it though, Karen. I think that's right up your alley. So conveniently that works for you.
Yes.
I thought it was pretty too. It's not just you.
Okay, good.
I think a lot of it is that there's so many. Everyone, like a lot of people write YA and it's so hard for the bigger houses to pick and choose. And sometimes if they've already picked up a book that has a similar storyline to the one you may have written, they're not going to choose you both because it saturates the market.
Right.
So they're going to let one go. And so for these houses who are looking at very specific genre have a way of picking up things that may have been overlooked. It doesn't mean that they're not good. It means someone maybe beat them to the punch kind of thing. So I think it opens up a lot of doors for a lot of authors to get in there and to have an opportunity where they may not have had it before.
Right. And if you're into a certain genre, you can just go to that publishing company and know that they're putting out exactly what you like to read. Like, I'm really interested in this Chai Teen one just because they're talking about dark literary genre fiction, which I've been really into lately, and they're going to be putting out horror as well, which I think is super interesting, especially under the guise of YA. So I might just, you know, look at what they have to offer and pick some books out of that.
If you want a really good horror YA, you need to read Anna Just in Blood.
Oh, yeah, that is on my list, actually.
It is so good. I love that book. Love it. And Stephanie Perkins is writing one, too. I don't know when it'll be out, but we all know we love her writing, so that's another one to check out. So, so good stuff, good stuff. So that wraps up this episode of Book Hype. As always, you guys can reach us through Twitter or leave comments on the podcast post. Thanks for listening. And as always, we will talk to you next time about all things in the book world, especially the Blood of Olympus, which I know we can't talk enough about at this point in time for Karen. So by the next time, we'll have to peel her off the ceiling, I think, by the time the next podcast runs around, because she'll have actually read the book, and it's all over by then.
Every time you say the title, I do this little dance, and I'm really glad nobody's watching me.
Oh, we need to video podcast, obviously. So, until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.